connectedness that is required in a system to be able to come together to save a life was missing. So systems existed, the number to call existed, the Good Samaritan existed, ambulances existed, hospitals existed, but the connected sort of policies and procedures that would ensure that a victim doesn't get dropped during this process was entirely missing.
Nonprofit in this country, whatever sector you may take it, exists to solve a gap that is created by a public system that is not working.
In order to scale to a population level, it is absolutely essential to be able to work with the government. 112 becomes a number that you call regardless of where you are in the country to get help.
Hello and welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I am your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, professionals, and philanthropists who are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and mission they've embarked on. In each episode, I speak to them, talking to them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, and of course, the little joys of life. It is as much about the personal life stories as about the entrepreneurial, professional, and philanthropic journeys. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms and directories. This episode is taking place at a particularly contextual time. In May this year, India's top court recognized timely trauma care for road accident victims as part of the right to life under Article 21. Save Life Foundation was instrumental in paving the way for this milestone. The judgment became a rare example of how nonprofits can drive legal and policy change at the national level. The story, however, doesn't end there. The focus now shifts to translating the top court's ruling to implementation and asking a more important question: can India's biggest social challenges be solved by replicating models like Save Lives? And if so, what does it actually take to do so? On this episode of Unusual Suspects, I have with me Piyush Tiwari, founder and CEO of Save Life Foundation, and Vikram Bhatt, CEO of Scale. Piyush brings rich experience in building one of India's most influential public interest movements ground up. Vikram's expertise in catalyzing funds for impact is instrumental in exploring how the lessons from one extraordinary story can be translated to diverse and enduring systemic change. Piyush and Vikram, delighted to have you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Piyush, first to you. You know, the Supreme Court is still monitoring how states comply to its May ruling. What does this judgment mean in practice? Having just been named to the new National Road Safety Board, you now sit inside the system. You spent years pushing from outside. You now have a front row seat and a ringside view and are also actually driving the change. How does that shape? What happens next, Piyush?
Thanks so much, Gaurav, firstly, for bringing this topic to the fore. Very, very crucial subject, but also something that has been ignored for many, many years. We started working at Save Life on this issue back in 2008 when I founded the organization, but really in 2012 when we moved the Honorable Supreme Court asking for a Good Samaritan law, which enables bystanders to come forward and help the injured in the event of an injury and the fact that they need to be protected. We were successfully able to get that in 2016. But we saw that there were challenges in the implementation. A grievance redressal mechanism should have existed, which was missing, and so on and so forth. In that period of time, between then and 2024, we also started to be a lot more on the ground and started to audit and observe how systems are moving, what was going on. And we discovered that while the government had done a fair amount of work, some of it was quite admirable. The interconnectedness that is required in a system to be able to come together to save a life was missing. So systems existed, the number to call existed, the Good Samaritan existed, ambulances existed, hospitals existed, but the connected sort of policies and procedures that would ensure that a victim doesn't get dropped during this process was entirely missing. And with that intention, we went to the Honorable Supreme Court, because this came out to be a subject where the union itself could not have done much, because this being a state subject, and states, you know, just simply because each state was at a different level, we wanted to make sure that there is some uniformity when it came to trauma care as, you know, being treated as a right. And that's how the process began. And what the challenge now is going to be that while the Honorable Court has mentioned very clearly that, for instance, 112 will be India's 911, which is the universal access number for any emergencies, the operationalization of that is where the challenge will come in. We are already seeing many states say, oh, we'll start an IVR. But the IVR is still the problem, right? Because you still have to choose which service to call. You are the one who has to make a choice as to who should be there, instead of a professional making the call in terms of what services should arrive, let's say, in the case of a bus fire. In the case of a bus fire, you need police, ambulance, and fire together. So should I be pressing different numbers in the IVR or calling the number again and again? So there are operationalization challenges that will come up as we go along. And this is an area that the National Road Safety Board, under the guidance of Nitin Gokarn, has also taken up under Working Group 5, which is the operationalization of right to trauma care in the country. So there will be some assistance that the board will extend. Of course, at Save Life, we are continuing to work with state governments to see how we can help them operationalize this. And at the same time, work with union to make sure that many of these things can be embedded in the larger frameworks so that they can exist beyond Save Life or beyond me and so on and so forth. So that's the really where things stand right now.
Thanks, Piyush. You know, Vikram, let me come to you. Why do you think is an outcome of this kind so rare, and why is it worth examining as more than a single success story, Vikram?
Thank you, Gaurav. Thank you for having me on the show, and it's a pleasure to be here with my dear friend Piyush. I think Save Life's work is remarkable at so many levels, you know, picking a problem that really deeply affects society and taking it to scale. I think the point I want us to anchor on is that every nonprofit in this country, whatever sector you may take it, exists to solve a gap that is created by a public system that is not working. And when a nonprofit steps in to solve for that, you know, everyone starts where the problem is, because that's where you learn and that's where you build your own understanding of the problem. And then naturally, as Piyush has explained you start figuring out where the system is broken. You start looking at various linkages that are broken. And that, in our view, is the ultimate work that needs to be done. So Piyush's organizations like Save Life are super important to the ecosystem, because they've spent a lot of time thinking deeply about the problem, about what linkages are broken. And then they apply that learning to actually going and fixing the system, rather than trying to work independently on the ground, and not just with the policy, but also looking to how to make that policy work across the various nodes of the system. And that is where we feel these kind of learnings, and there are many, many organizations like this. Scale has published a report around this called an Exemplars report, where Save Life is also featured, which talks about how in various sectors, organizations have taken this systemic view and then tried to solve for it in a way that the conditions that hold the problem in place are actually removed, so that the problem is solved for a large population permanently. These organizations, we call them as system support organizations. And I think that's where the learning is. That's where you can transfer a lot of what Piyush's organization has done into other domains.
You know, Piyush, Vikram just talked about local conditions, et cetera, and you need to make it scalable also. You have developed road safety models that you implement in partnership with the government and the state governments. How did you build these programs? Because you have to make it repeatable and also, importantly, adaptable to local context. And that calls for significant cultural and local adjustments too, isn't it, Piyush?
No, absolutely. You're right, you know, on the dot about that. One thing I want to clarify is that we fundamentally believe that in order to scale to a population level, it is absolutely essential to be able to work with the government. because there is no other agency that has the kind of access and inroads into the country at population level as government. So from the very beginning, we recognize this. No amount of philanthropic capital can reach 1.4 billion people. Eventually, it will be the systems that have been running since our independence that will take us there. So with that premise in mind, we wanted to make sure that we build something that can be that is good enough, which means it has impact, simple enough, which means it can be adapted to multiple different kinds of realities, and cheap enough, which means that it does not require a massive capital investment, but existing funds, existing pools, existing governance mechanisms can come together to spend on that, you know, on the intervention. And eventually all of that came together into what we now call our Zero Fatality Corridor and Zero Fatality District programs. But the one thing that is very, very crucial, and what we realized in through our work, is that there's a lot of global guidance that exists on road safety, for example, just like it exists on climate, water, and so on and so forth. And what we started to realize was that global guidance was essentially based on patterns. It was not based on necessarily what the local evidence was telling us.
Right.
So when we started to go down on the ground and started to forensically investigate road crashes along with government agencies, started to research the issue a lot more, started to talk to communities, we started to realize that a lot of that global guidance was almost entirely off. They were sending us in a direction that was not going to solve the problem that we were facing. So what we realized was that cultural empathy, which is the empathy that is required for different cultures, even within India, mm-hmm. is very, very crucial to in order to build solutions around some of these complex problems that we're dealing with. So Absolutely. When we look at our model, it's not just good enough, cheap enough, and simple enough. It needs to be evidence-driven, but it also needs to be driven by cultural empathy.
Right.
And that's what we end up spending a fair amount of time on when we talk to communities, talk to people. We understand that top tier, for example, police leadership is very important. But the local constable is equally important because that insight is not available with the very top. So it's very, very important for us to package it in a way that it takes into account some of these complexities that exist in our country. And for us, the evolution really was that we had to do an R&D to see if it works, which we did on the Mumbai-Pune Expressway, where we've now mm-hmm. delivered a 58% drop in deaths. We then had to replicate it where we went to 18 more highways of different kinds, where we delivered an average of 32% drop in deaths. And then today we are now taking it to 100 highways and 100 districts across the country at the scale level, right? So this has been a decade long process of testing, replicating, and scaling while keeping in mind many of these facets that I just mentioned about. And it's an evolutionary process. Even today we are improving the program through micro improvements. Eventually, micro improvements come together to create big change. And those micro improvements may not be at our end. Sometimes it's at the end of a district magistrate or a local PWD. And then we bring that learning back into the program and then we distribute that. So
right.
all of those keep this a very living organism that is growing and evolving. And hopefully in the next 5 to 7 years, we'll make a major dent in this problem that we're trying to solve.
Absolutely. You know, Vikram, you talked about scaling this up to the population scale, and that absolutely requires, working with the government. The success of the Save Life Foundation's road safety model lies in embedding inside the government. What makes that more durable than running parallel programs, for instance? And when does embedding not work? Because it may not always work, or depend on the public system itself being able to carry. Do we at some point in time get to a stage that where, you know, it's embedded within the system, within the government, and then it gets, you achieve success just by default?
No, that's a great point. I'm going to bring up an example which answers your first question, which says, you know, why embed through government and scale that way rather than growing the program? And, you know, look at Akshay Patra, which is a scale program. I think they do, my guess is, you know, close to 10 million meals daily. I may be off the number, but it's in that range, which is an incredible operation. You go to their kitchens and you're blown away by how well they've scaled it. Yet they serve a fraction of this country's population, you know, compared to what, maybe less than 5%, you know. And so even an operation as well-oiled, as committed, as efficient as Akshay Patra can only serve a fraction of this country's population, which comes to Piyush's point that if we want the problem to go away, in the end, the government system or the public system has to deliver on it. There is just no other way. And I think the most important thing, again, it was in Piyush's answer, where the cultural context has to be truly understood when you're taking a solution from point A to point B. And I'll give a couple of points there. One is in road safety, which I think is a reasonably standardized, Piyush may correct me on this, but it's reasonably standardized as an idea across the country, right? What constitutes safety, what constitutes response to an accident and so on. But when you take something like education or health, it's so much more nuanced about what needs to be taught in a classroom or when someone's being counseled for postnatal care, what they needs to be told and what needs to happen is very nuanced as per the community. So just getting that nuance and that cultural adjustment is so important. And why most solutions don't work is because they don't get contextualized. You know, famously, we all know this, India is 1,000 countries in one. And so right. If you try to even go from district to district, things change so much. And I think the ones that succeed, the entrepreneurs like Piyush who succeed, are ones who recognize that, look, government is the doer and payer at scale. I have to find a way to make sure that their program works. And in a sense, I'm willing to then do whatever it takes, because I have the understanding, to almost adapt that solution or that implementation to that context. They will put in that hard work and really leave no stone unturned. And it's a very different kind of entrepreneurs. These SSOs or system support organizations really commit to that, rather than saying, I want to be at the beneficiary level.
Absolutely. You know, Piyush, the May 2026 judgment was a milestone. But what really changes on the ground now? How is timely care delivered to trauma victims today? Yush?
You know, let me use an example to demonstrate what our vision is, right? So the vision is that if there is a unfortunate incident on a road that involves people getting injured, then the people who are around them, or even people who are inside that vehicle, know exactly which one number to call. They don't have to guess, depending upon which state they are in, which highway they are in, that, oh, maybe I have to dial 1033, maybe I have to dial 108, maybe I have to dial 101, maybe I have to dial 102, and so on and so forth. There are some highways that currently have a 10-digit mobile number that you have to remember if you want to call help, right? So that changes. 112 becomes the number that you call regardless of where you are in the country to get help. A dispatcher picks up the phone, triages the incident, and dispatches the agency or agencies that are required to attend to you. This would include police, fire, health. And in the case of mass casualty incident, like a bus crash, it could also include an SDRF being invoked and sent to the site and not having to wait for hours to pass before SDRF is invoked. Once in the meanwhile, while the help is arriving, bystanders would be able to provide assistance. Now, assistance could be as little as making a phone call for help, could be words of comfort, but could be care, medical care that they have been trained on, bleeding control and so forth. People arrive there on the site, extricate the victims, you know, professionally. Right now, extrication is a big part of the problem. Ambulances arrive and then they're waiting for fire to arrive so that they can extricate the victims by cutting the vehicle. That delay doesn't happen. So victim doesn't get dropped in that process. Extrication arrives, victim is properly extricated, put in the ambulance. The staff manning the ambulance is qualified. Right now, if you walk onto a highway ambulance and you ask them how to check for pulse, you may not get the right answer. So a certified paramedic has to be there. Then more importantly, they need to know where to take the victim.
Right.
Not if it's an open brain trauma, you can't take the person to a PHC. You have to take them to a level 2, level 1 trauma center.
Right.
That will only happen once hospitals are graded from level 4 to level 1. Level 4 being the minimum and level 1 being the most super specialty hospital that can save a life. That communication channel between the ambulance and the hospital will be established, which means that if I decide to take the victim to a level 2 trauma center, which is 10 kilometers away, I will inform them in advance so that they can prepare for the victim's arrival. Once the victim arrives, and let's say the victim requires even higher level of care for, and requires a referral, then the victim gets packaged. Victim gets first aid. Victim gets life-saving care, gets packaged to survive a journey of maybe 50 kilometers to a center for higher care.
Right.
And the inter-hospital transfer agreement between those two facilities will ensure that the victim arrives safely and is accepted and doesn't have to wait, and eventually that life is saved. So this chain, what we call the chain of survival, is really what this judgment is enabling. And we will stay stuck on this till the time we see this vision coming to life, whether it's operationalizing 112, whether it's getting this extrication system working, the prior notification system, inter-hospital transfer agreements. And guess what? None of this requires any extra money.
Right.
It's just systems being created, people being made responsible to ensure that this linkage is maintained and that there is a technology platform, you know, potentially that keeps this converted into a trauma registry as the Supreme Court has asked for.
Absolutely.
So that's really what we are hoping this judgment will do, and ensure that not just road crash victims, but victim of any injury. You know, India loses 4.5 lakh people a year to injury. Of that, 200,000 people are road crash victims, but the remaining 2.5 lakh people are victims of other injuries. And they also deserve the same kind of care and same kind of attention, same kind of speed. So this law is not just pertaining to road crash victims. It addresses the general lack of trauma care in the country, or the general missing chain of survival in the country. While there are various aspects that exist, as I mentioned, states and union have done a good job in some of these aspects. But the interconnectedness is what we are hoping to establish through this process.
You know, Piyush, let me ask you something about Save Life itself. You know, building a journey like Save Life takes years, not months. And this requires a lot of persistence, patience, and also, of course, passion and the belief. Now, if you look back over the past decade, how has the landscape for funding nonprofits changed? What kind of funding has been most important in enabling organizations like yours to pursue long-term systemic change? Piyush?
Yeah. I think the system of funding has matured quite a lot in the way it looks at solutions, in the way it looks at its own contribution. I also would like to say that while the FCRA is a fairly, in the media circles, a fairly controversial piece of legislation, we actually welcome it, because what it has done is that it has ensured that highly vetted organizations with a clear mission, clear systems, clear delivery patterns are the ones that hold the FCRA.
Right.
And so it is no longer just a regulatory framework. It is actually a big stamp of credibility that many nonprofits now carry, because we have gone through the process of being vetted by multiple agencies, multiple audits. Our programs have been impact evaluated on the ground. So what that does is that both the regulatory side of funding as well as the giving side of funding has matured. What has also happened is, like, organizations like Scale, which are organizations that are not just facilitative in nature, which are, I feel, creating a new thought process, have come up, because the Indian philanthropy has to mature. The Indian CSR has to mature. It has to get out of the 31st March cycle, because many of the complex problems can't work on a 31st March cycle sword hanging on our heads. So many of these, movement has happened. One thing I want to mention is, Gaurav, is that for every rupee we invest of philanthropic money into road safety, last year we unlocked 66 rupees of government investment into the issue. So the leverage is 1:66. So to be able to appreciate that, I think that appreciation has now come in donors, that is our money just solving an incidental problem, or is our money actually getting larger systemic ownership going? And I think what's happening is that our investment is leading to systemic ownership, which is what will allow us to become redundant someday, hopefully. That's our mission. So that's really the evolution that I have seen happen over this last many years in this space.
You know, thank you, Piyush, for that. And, you know, Vikram, Piyush talked about the need to get out of the March 31 cycle, at least in terms of approach and attitude and also practice. Now, if the goal is to see more journeys like Save Lives, what needs to change in the way philanthropy and CSR support nonprofits, Vikram?
No, thank you so much, Piyush, for giving me a nice punchline for my next meeting whenever I go in. But more importantly, I think also to say that, you know, Piyush said he'll become redundant. I doubt, you know, people like him will ever be redundant. I think they'll either go on to the next problem or they'll hopefully, you know, make better policies for this country. The idea, you know, I just want to anchor us in one number. The government spends 25 lakh crores on social sector schemes. All philanthropy in India combined, this is 20 data from a year ago. All philanthropy combined is 1.5 lakh crores, so a little over 5% of that number. And CSR is about 30,000 crores. Today it's 40,000 crores, but when this number was reported, it was about 30,000 crores. So minuscule compared to what the government is actually spending. So the point Piyush was talking about of leverage or unlocking government money or making government more efficient, all of these can be measured today. And SSOs like Save Life are really, really at the cutting edge of that. So what our hypothesis is, you know, Scale was created with the mission of bringing philanthropy, SSOs and government together to solve these big problems. And in a way that there is enough of an understanding of this way of working inside all three domains. So more and more, I think Indian philanthropy is coming around. I think it's always like who'll jump first into the pool, right? Like it's a matter of getting that collective energy and that confidence that we want to move into it together. And this is, I think, where organizations like Scale can play a role, because we can even advocate for it with the MCA. We can advocate for it with board members. For instance, this new ruling with the Social Stock Exchange, where if a CSR puts money into an organization on the Social Stock Exchange, up to 10% of their total investment, they don't have to file impact reports, you know, these onerous impact. So they're in a sense freed from that burden. And to Piyush's point about FCRA, the SSC is also very, very, they're very strict about their due diligence process. So if you get onto the SSC, you're already getting a stamp of approval as an SSO or an organization that's working in the social space. So the sector is maturing, and part of that maturing is even philanthropy recognizing that I can't just do things in a 1 year cycle, but at some level, sometimes the law might have to change a little bit, give it some flexibility. Sometimes we'll need to have a collective, and sometimes it's just a matter of the right SSO coming forward and being so compelling like Piyush is, that anybody would give money to them.
Absolutely. You know, Piyush, you're ambitious about expanding the Save Life model, even taking it beyond borders. How can what you have achieved in India become a blueprint for other regions? Is it a template that can be replicated across the world, particularly in our immediate geographies, in the neighborhood? What are the lessons that hold for organizations across sectors and regions? Piyush?
Yeah. Thanks so much for that question, Gaurav. You know, of the 1.2 million people killed every year in road crashes around the world, 92% of those people live in low and middle income countries, right, like India. And 65% of those people come from extremely economically vulnerable backgrounds. So these are the poor people who are getting killed in these countries largely, right? Now, the moment we realized that the global guidances that we were receiving around this issue early on were quite off in understanding what was driving the root cause of the problem, we started to solve for it. And when we started to solve for it, we realized that because we could solve wearing the hat of cultural empathy for a country as complex as India, could we then also share this model as a Make in India solution to this road safety, a global road safety problem, but that resides in the global south largely, to other countries? And before we could even make a move, we were invited by the United Nations to a ministerial level conference on road safety to present our model. Mm-hmm. And once we presented our model, we got tremendous interest from countries, with more recently to the Thai government. We made a presentation to their parliamentary committee, and they have identified a province in northeastern Thailand for us to expand the zero fatality district model to. Now, of course, my focus and the organization's focus remains on India right now, because we have barely scratched the surface here, we feel. I think we are onto something and we can definitely solve this, but it takes a lot more concerted effort here. But there's nothing stopping us from creating a small unit to see if we can transfer at least our learnings and knowledge and our approach to some of these countries to see if they can apply it in their settings overall. So that's really where we are in this journey of expansion. But I do feel that many of the Indian nonprofits are really at cutting edge of solving some of the complex problems, keeping the cultural context in mind. And I do feel that many of these solutions can be extended to countries outside of India. Of course, we need a lot more support, a lot more bandwidth, and a lot more significant leadership that understands how global operations work to be able to do that. But it's definitely an opportunity to take some of these solutions from India to other countries and hopefully also use that to improve our relationship with many of these countries.
Absolutely. Vikram, can a model built for road safety actually be portable? Can it serve as a template for particularly in areas like education or public health? Is it transferable? What is transferable and what is not, Vikram?
Absolutely transferable. I think what's really transferable is, Piyush hinted at this, there is a way of working with government. And if you figure out that process or crack that code, and I see Piyush do this informally anyway, and hopefully Scale will formalize some of that, where he mentors a lot of young entrepreneurs who are trying to work with government. So working with government is almost like an art. You have to be, and it's nuanced. It looks different in different sectors, but it is learnable. I think the commitment to learning it is the most important thing. Once we have that and we have a system where people are learning it, then a lot of these lessons become transferable into other domains. Of course, you have to adapt it. You have to adapt it not just for the sector or the thematic area that you're working in, but also the geography that you're trying to do it in. To the earlier point Piyush was making about going to other countries, exporting this idea internationally, we were both at this conference in the UK earlier this year. And, we must be proud. We have a government that for most part is very, very open to working with the civil society, to bring ideas in, to adapt, to integrate them into its work and really listen as once the trust is built. And when I was narrating some case studies of my parent organization, the Convergence Foundation, how we have approached our work in government, they were aghast. They were like, wow, we didn't know this kind of work was happening in India. And a lot of our learnings don't actually go out into the global forum with as much, with as big a blowhorn as it should. So I think it's really time that we started showcasing these ideas and almost, exporting this as an idea. But to your earlier question, so much of this is learnable. I think we need to create structures where entrepreneurs like Piyush, in a very structured environment and in a sense curated environment, learn from each other. I think once we create that, a lot of these are very, very transferable.
Absolutely. And final question to both of you. From your vantage point, both of you have a ringside view, front row seat, and also driving the change. Can you tell us about one change that matters most for population scale change in the coming decade? What's the way forward? Piyush, first to you.
I think the one big thing that's going to be happening and something that I think will be quite a bit of a lever is the coming up of collectives. When a lot of organizations, a lot of people, a lot of philanthropists and the government have started to come together. Now, so far, it's been happening at the trigger or at the instance of, let's say, a organization or a individual. But I think much of this will get formalized because the problem that our country has faced traditionally has been the othering of the sectors. I'm government, you are corporate, and the other person is NGO. NGO is saying, this is government, this is corporate. So there has always been a bit of a siloed approach. And what the SSOs are doing and what organizations like TCF and Scale are enabling also is that how do we get these different, sectors in our society and economy to come and work together so that some of the more complex problems can be solved? So I do feel that more formal collectives, more formal platforms will start coming up where many of us can collaborate so that the othering of the sectors does not happen. And there is a more natural evidence-based but also culturally driven kind of adaptation and adoption of solutions to solve the more complex challenges.
Absolutely. Vikram, what do you think could be the most important change that
matters? Yeah, Gaurav, you have asked for the Ramban. You've asked for one answer to everything that can be done. I think if I were to put one factor that I would really want to see, it would be domestic philanthropy giving flexible and longer-term capital to SSOs like Save Life so that they can really engage with the government meaningfully. A lot of government work is not very predictable, so you can't do it in your March 31st cycles. So you have to trust the entrepreneur, trust-based model of philanthropy, which gives of domestic philanthropy. And we have some very, 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 very progressive and great thinkers in our philanthropic environment. If they can start giving longer term and flexible capital to SSOs, I think it would be a big, big step forward.
Absolutely. Trust is the currency here. Thank you so much, Vikram and Piyush, for sharing your deep insights and perspective on a range of issues. Thank you so much for taking the time out and dropping by this conversation with us.
Thank you, Gaurav. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.